Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we'll be reading from the sixth canto, chapter 11, text number 22. Pungsang Kilakanta Diyang Swakanang Yak Samparo Divi Bhumau Rasayam Na Rati Yad Dvesha Udvega Adir Madak Kalir Yasanang Samprayasha Pungsang Kilaikanta Diyang Swakanam Yak Samparo Devi Bhumau Rasayam Narati Advesha Udvega Adir Madakkalir Vyasanam Samprayashaha Pungsam Kilaikanta Diyam Swakanam Yaksam Paro Devi Bhumau Rasayam Narati Advesha Udvega Adir Madakkalir Vyasanam Samprayasha Pungsang Kilaikanta Diyang Swakanam Yaksam Paro Devi Bhumau Rasayam Narati Advesha Udvega Adir Madakkalir Vyasanam Samprayasaha Kilaikanta diyam swakanam Yaksam paro devi bhumau rasayam Narati advesha udvega adir Madakkalir vyasanam samprayasaha Pungsang Kilaikanta Diyang Swakanam Yaksam Paro Devi Bhumau Rasayam Narati Advesha Udvega Adir Madakkalir Vyasanam Samprayasaha Mataji's, please. Pungsang kilai kanta diyang swakanam. Yaksam paro devi bhumau rasayam. Narati adveshu dvegadir. Madakkali vyasanam samprayasaha. Pungsang kilai kanta diyang swakanam. Yaksam paro devi bhumau rasayam. Narati adveshu dvegadir. Madakkali vyasanam samprayasaha. Pungsam. Unto persons. Kila. Certainly. Ekanta diyam. Who are advanced in spiritual consciousness. Swakanam. Who are recognized by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As his own. Yaha. Which. Samparaha. Opulences. Devi. In the upper planetary systems. Bhumau. In the middle planetary systems. Rasayam. And in the lower planetary systems. Na. Not. Rati. Bestows. Yat. From which. Dvaishaha. Envy. Udvegaha. Anxiety. Adihi. Mental agitation. Maraha. Pride. Kalehi. Quarrel. Vyasanam. Distress due to loss. Samprayasaha. Great endeavor. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and always think of His lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as His own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this world. When one possesses material opulences in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increase his enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 4:11, the Lord says, Ye yata mam prapadyante tang sataiva brjamyaham mamavartmana nuvartante manushak parta sarvashaha. As devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O Sanaprita. Both Indra and Vritrasura were certainly devotees of the Lord. Although Indra took instructions from Vishnu to kill Vritrasura, the Lord was actually more favorable to Vritrasura because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Vritrasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. Vritrasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. To accumulate material possessions, one must labor very hard. And when he gets them, he creates many enemies because this material world is always full of rivalry. If one becomes rich, his friends or relatives are envious. For ekanta bhaktas, unalloyed devotees, Krishna therefore never provides material possessions. A devotee sometimes needs some material possessions for preaching, but the possessions of a preacher are not like those of a karmi. Akarmi's possessions are achieved as a result of karma. But those of a devotee are arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to facilitate his devotional activities. Because a devotee never uses material possessions for any purpose other than the service of the Lord, the possessions of a devotee are not to be compared to those of a karmi. Omagyana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur unilitangi na tasmai shri gurve namaha. Namaung Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shimate Palatananda Swaitone. Namaung Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Buddhale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swaitone. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pratarne Nirvishesha Shunivati Paschatya Adhishitarne. So just so all the terms here are clear, because I had someone mention in a previous class that not everyone is familiar with all these Sanskrit terms. So a karmi is one who engages in karmic activities, just as a yogi is one who engages in yoga. So the point that Vritrasura is making here is a very important point. And actually this whole speech by Vritrasura, these instructions that he's giving, is just really amazing Indra. Indra had no idea what an amazing personality he'd come up against. He just thought that he was coming up against some very powerful demon. But yet this demon is giving him transcendental instruction in how to achieve the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's rather amazing. It reminds me also of when Bharat Maharaj, when he came back as Jad Bharat, he was drafted into the service of a king. Rahugana. So King Rahugana was, you know, somewhat arrogant and puffed up with all his opulences and power and position. And King Rahugana was becoming very disturbed by the fact that his palanquin was being jostled around so much. And so he started verbally abusing his servants. You know, what's wrong with you? Don't you even know how to walk properly? And so Jad Bharat, when he was asked why he was behaving so radically, he explained that actually along this pathway there were so many living entities, so many bugs and ants and insects littering the ground, and he was struggling with great effort to not crush any of these living entities obstructing the path, and consequently the king's palanquin was being handled very roughly. And then Jad Bharat goes on to give full transcendental teachings to King Rahugana, which is also another very amazing pastime. You know, here this king thinks that he's, because what happened is Jad Bharat was recruited off the fields. Everyone thought that he was deaf and dumb. He had a very strongly built body. So people would use him simply for his brawn, for his bodily strength. Because anything else that he was engaged in, he would do it wrong. He just couldn't seem to get it right. And other people thought that he was just stupid. But in actuality, he was intentionally doing the opposite of what everyone asked him to do. Because in his previous life as Jad Bharat, he became attached, he became entangled. He was at the point of bhava. Bhava is the preliminary stage of pure love of God. And in this stage, because he didn't have the association of devotees, in this stage, which is extremely advanced, it's stated that when one is in the stage of bhava, then we're practically in tears all the time because the ecstasy is so intense. But yet he saw this deer being chased by a tiger. And the mother deer was in so much fright that she had a miscarriage as she was crossing over a river. And then she was in so much fright that on the other side of the river, the mother deer died. And so Bharat Maharaj, you know, he sees this newborn baby deer struggling in the water that's about to die. So his mistake was that he had material compassion rather than spiritual compassion. He was just materially considering about the body of this poor baby deer. And from this material compassion developed strong attachment. He felt that only by his ability, by his mercy, by his loving attention, would this deer actually be brought up, be able to survive. And so consequently, at all times, he was meditating upon this deer, even when he was engaged in his devotional activities. When he was going through the motions of meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his meditation, rather than thinking about the lotus feet of the Lord, he was thinking about this baby deer. How is this baby deer doing? Is he all right? Does he have all his necessities? And so in such a way, his transcendental realization became spoiled to such an extent that one day when he was engaged in his devotional activities, thoughts of the deer were perturbing his mind, and he didn't see the deer anywhere around. So he left his duties and he went out to search for the deer. And in the process, he died. And then he was born into a deer's body in his next life, because that's the state of consciousness he had when he left this body. But by the grace of the Lord, because he was such an exalted devotee, and because devotional qualities, devotional attributes are never lost, he maintained his same consciousness even though in a deer's body. And so in this deer's body, he went back to the same hermitage, and he associated with saintly people to listen to them discuss Harikatha, topics about Krishna. So in this way, after going through this deer lifetime, he took another birth as Judd Bharat. And once again, he had complete memory of his previous two lifetimes. So now that he was completely convinced about what his mistake was and not falling into the same pitfalls, he was determined to not become attached to anything in this material world. So he intentionally did everything within his ability to have others reject him as an incompetent fool. His father was trying to raise him as a nice young Brahmin. He was born into a Brahmin family. But yet, he would do everything backwards. He would do everything opposite of whatever his father asked. So his father figured, well, this is just a useless child. Send him out to the fields. So then that's when he ultimately met King Rahugana. And then enlightened King Rahugana in this transcendental knowledge. You know, what appeared to be just this lumbering oaf of a fool giving pure transcendental teachings, to the point to where the king jumps off his palanquin and pays his full obeisances to Judd Bharat, recognizing what a tremendously great saintly person he is. So in the same way, these instructions by Vritrasura to Indra is impressing Indra in a similar way. And it's actually making Indra quite fearful, as mentioned in a previous class, because previously he had killed the personality who was his spiritual master, who was a Brahmin. And now he's about to kill another guru of his. So it's making Indra very nervous. So a really important point that Prabhupada hits upon here is that of attachment to different material desires and how that attachment can differentiate people even among devotees. You know, both Indra and Vritrasura were both devotees. But yeah, Vritrasura, he was a pure devotee. He had no material attachments. He had no material desires whatsoever. So he was actually very anxious for Indra to kill him. He couldn't wait for Indra to finally complete his task, because he knew that as soon as my head is cut off, I'm going back to the spiritual world. Whereas Indra, because of his material attachments, because of his desire to enjoy great opulence, great comfort and wealth and power within this material world, he would be doomed, as Prabhupada put, to rot here in the material world, lifetime after lifetime, even though he's a devotee, but because he's harboring these material attachments, it will force him to take further births. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that he gives the intelligence to everyone how to achieve their desired goals. In 10.10 he says, Tesham satata yukta nam bhajatam priti porvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they come to me. So Krishna, he's not only giving this intelligence to the pure devotees, he's also giving intelligence to the karmis, to everyone. He's giving everyone the intelligence and the sanction to engage in the activities they want. Krishna says later in the 13th chapter, Upadrashta Anumanta Cha Bharta Bhukta Maheshwara. So he's the overseer and permitter of all the activities that everyone's engaging in. He's sanctioning everyone's activities. Even though he may not agree with what everyone is doing, but still, because he gives us free will, and because he understands that it won't ultimately bring us any permanent detriment, you know, it's like a parent having their children in a sandbox. The parents know that when the child's in the sandbox, they'll be safe. There's nothing to worry about, ultimately. Even though the child may get in an argument or a fight or hanker after, you know, some toy or fight each other over a shovel or so many really petty things, but still they're in the sandbox. No real harm can come to them. In the same way, we're all here in this material world, and this material world is like that sandbox. Even though we may go through so much suffering, undergo so much pain, take so many births, but ultimately, everyone will get tired of taking birth after birth in this material world. At a certain point, everyone will get frustrated with it and then turn their attention back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and inquire, how did I get here and how can I get out of this? So Prabhupada makes a nice point that this is the most important question to ask. How do I get out of here? What am I? Who is Krishna? And how do I get out of here? Prabhupada explains that animals are not capable, they're incapable of asking this very important question. And since we've been given this human form of life, it's imperative that we ask this question. Because we have this material body, all material bodies indicate that we're in a suffering condition. Prabhupada says that if you have a material body, you must suffer. This is the condition. This is the material condition. Therefore, our Krishna consciousness movement is meant for mitigating the so-called sufferings of the body. When there is body, there must be suffering. So we should not be very much disturbed by the sufferings of the body, because you'll have to suffer. Even though you make a very nice arrangement. Just like in comparison to Europe and America, in European cities we see so many nice arrangements, living conditions, big, big houses, big, big road, nice cars. In comparison to India, if some Indian comes from Indian village, he'll see, here it is heaven, so nice house, so nice building, so nice motor cars. But do you think you are not suffering? He may think, the rascal may think that here is heaven, but those who are residing in this heaven, they know what kind of heaven it is. You know, so this is the point. Even though it may seem like we're enjoying so much, or it may seem like somebody else is enjoying so much with all these material opulences, but it's not actual enjoyment. They're not free from suffering. They're not free from desire, material desire. That's why Krishna says in the second chapter, text 70 of the Bhagavad Gita, Apuri manam achala pratishtam samudram apak pravishyanti yadvat tadvat kama yam pravishyanti sarve sashantim apnoti nakama kami. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enters like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So Indra is currently falling into this category. Indra is filled with desires that he is constantly struggling to try to satisfy, one desire after another. Indra is all the time battling the demons, trying to make the aspiring devotees fall down. Anyone who he thinks is competing with him, he sends his apsaras after. Indra is very envious of so many living entities because he's so attached, he's so concerned about his power and prestige and situation. So Prabhupada says in the purport to that verse, 270, that the proof of a Krishna conscious person is one who has lost all inclination for material sense gratification, although the desires are still present. So that's very important to understand. Because we have this material body, because this material body is an indicator of our suffering condition, we will always feel the pushings of material desires. It's concomitant with having a material body, is having desires, material desires. But a Krishna conscious person has no inclination, has no desire to satisfy any of these unlimited material desires that are constantly flowing into the body, just as all these rivers are flowing into the ocean. Rather, a Krishna conscious person transfers the desire, because it's the nature of the soul to be constantly active. The soul is never inert. And because of this active state, it also desires. But the difference is the soul desires to serve Krishna. The soul doesn't have selfish desires. So in that regard, this ties into the last point that Prabhupada's making about how a devotee sometimes needs material possessions for preaching. And then Krishna supplies these necessities. Because a devotee doesn't identify with these different material things. From an external point of view, it may seem as if this devotee is desiring material opulences. But that's from a materialistic understanding. Srila Rupa Goswami explained in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, there's two verses. I'll just read the translation because we're running short of time. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. On the other hand, one who rejects everything without knowledge of its relationship to Krishna is not as complete in his renunciation. That's from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 1-255-256. So this is describing both Yukta Vairagya and Palgu Vairagya. Palgu Vairagya is described by the second statement about one who rejects everything without its knowledge of that relationship to Krishna. So that's immature or incomplete renunciation, because you're not really understanding who all these things belong to. And so therefore, out of a desire to get freed from this bondage of these possessions, you're immaturely renouncing them. But someone with a broader understanding, who can see that everything actually belongs to Krishna, then they don't prematurely reject or try to renounce these different things. Rather, they see how this was provided directly by Krishna, and it's to be used in Krishna's service. For instance, oftentimes when people come to Krishna consciousness, they get very fired up and a spiritual fire, and they feel, I just want to give it all up. I don't want anything to do with this material world anymore. And so they give everything away. They give away all their money, all their possessions, their house, all their relations, and then they come. But that shows an immature level of understanding. They don't really understand who all these things belong to. Where the devotee, like for instance Srila Prabhupada, he could understand very clearly that actually all these material things, all this material energy, it belongs to Krishna. It comes from Krishna. So therefore, let me drive in a motor car, let me fly in an airplane, let me use a dictaphone, let me use so many of these modern conveniences that are available, but use them for Krishna rather than for my own sense gratification. Because actually in India at the time, both Prabhupada and Prabhupada's spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was actually criticized heavily. He would wear a turban, he would wear an overcoat, he would drive in, what was it, Rolls Royces?
Jaguar.
Yeah. And at the time, if you were a renunciate, if you were a sannyasi, you were considered like the epitome of hedonism if you would wear a Western dress or, you know, Krishna forbid, drive in a car. You know, where is your renunciation? And so many people would criticize him for this. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was making the point through his activities that this isn't real renunciation. Real renunciation is renouncing our lordship, is renouncing our desire to possess and control for our own selfish desires these material objects. So for devotees, it's very important to always keep in mind the instructions given in the purport for today's verse, because it's very important. When we over-endeavor for material desires, even though we may be devotees, it dampens the fire. It's like trying to have a nice fire and then throwing water on it, or throwing wet wood on it. It smothers the fire. It may not put it out, Your fire may still be going on. You may still be a devotee, chanting your 16 rounds, following the principles. But yet you're putting, you know, wet leaves on top of the fire. And so the fire may turn into just a tiny smolder. And consequently, it won't burn to the same brightness that we all hanker for. So that's why we should always be extremely careful when we have to deal with this material energy. We should always maintain the proper consciousness. We should always understand who this material energy belongs to. And we should also always have full faith and understanding that whatever I need, whatever necessities I need and I require for my service, and to maintain this body and soul together, or if we're in household life, to maintain this family together, all those necessities will be satisfied by Krishna. And if it seems to be beyond my reach, maybe I don't really need it that much then. Maybe it's more a want rather than a need. And then just be satisfied in what you have and devote the rest of your energy towards Krishna consciousness, rather than striving so unnecessarily for very difficult to achieve things. It's described in the Nectar of Instruction that that's called prayashas, unnecessary endeavors for material things, which is damaging for spiritual life. So I'll end there. If there's any comments or questions, yes, Prabhupada?
My question is that Volkswagen that you drive, is that something that Krishna has given to you to assist you in your preaching? Or is it something that we should understand you've achieved as a result of your past pious activities?
It's something that Krishna has given.
Okay. I'm prepared to give you the benefit of the doubt.
As a result of my past pious activities, I never had a vehicle before I came to the temple here. Anyone else? Sachinoy?
Thank you, Pankara Prabhu. In your lecture, you were describing somehow or other you managed to talk about Bharat Maharaj and his realization of material affection. And I always think that it's not overemphasized to always mention this to remind us. And recently we just went to some situation in which a devotee had that attachment for some particular animal. And I was just seeing that how dangerous it is if this person will have to leave his body at this time with that kind of consciousness. We don't know the future. And I can testify this, how material attachments are, because I was grew up in a farm, and my father had like horses and mules and donkeys and all kinds of animals. And every time he would sell an animal that I had, that I used to ride on, it was painful like anything. I still remember the day that one time he sold a beautiful horse we have, and then another time a mule. And these animals, after you sold them, they will come back to your home, belonging to another owner, but they come back because that attachment is so strong. What will we do as child? We will cry. I will cry. And then I'm seeing, whenever I see devotees becoming attached to a particular living entity or animal, I try to justify that might be in Krishna's service that they're doing this, but still I can get away from my mind that material affection for particular living beings can bring you down to, you know, another birth. And Bhakti Marga Maharaj was having a beautiful place in which he, to emphasize the preaching of how dangerous it is, in one scene his disciples are there playing the role of going to a beautiful deer, and he says, no, stay away! And they will go, oh, how beautiful. No, please don't touch it. Get away. he was just overemphasizing, like, don't do it. I know what you're going to go through after that. So similarly, I think it's not, I don't want to put myself in a situation in which I criticize. I don't want to criticize. I do it out of kindheartedness that any devotee who is pursuing Krishna consciousness, please be aware of this. And I am a friend of them. I really want with good heart to eventually, you know, maybe detach themselves from that and don't go through bad experience later on. So that was
my comment. Thank you. That's a good point. And it doesn't end with just animals either. I knew one devotee who was telling me a story about when he was bathing in the Ganga. He was bathing in the Ganga, and for those of you who don't know, the Ganga is an extremely powerful river. The current is stronger than you can possibly imagine. It's not like any other river you've ever been in. So he was bathing in the Ganga, and he got sucked under by the current. And he started to be tossed around, and he was starting to take in some water into his lungs, and he was realizing, I'm in the process of leaving my body right now. The only thing he could think of was some jingle from a television commercial. It went something like, double your pleasure, double your fun. Because he wasn't being so strict with his consciousness. That's why our society is called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's about being conscious of Krishna. So even something that seems so innocent as watching television, it severely impacts our consciousness. And so that experience showed him to never watch television again. From that point on, he never watched television again. You know, because it was such an intense experience, he realized, I'm about to die. And all he could think of was this television jingle. You know, by Krishna's mercy, a devotee jumped in and saved him. So he could benefit from that realization. But you're right, it's important. We should always be very conscious of what's happening within our mind. And above all, we should be honest with ourselves. That's really what's required, a high degree of almost brutal honesty. Even if it hurts to be that honest with yourself, you must be that honest with yourself. Otherwise, you'll be an illusion. You'll be thinking, I'm doing okay, I'm fine, you know, I'm a devotee, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. But meanwhile, where's your mind? Where's your consciousness? So in order to come to these more subtle levels of spiritual advancement, it requires extreme honesty to yourself so you can admit when your mind and your consciousness is diverging to other places. Last comment with Archita, because it's getting late.
Yes, Hare Krishna. This comes up so often. As you rightly pointed out, you can't artificially detach yourself from anything. It has to be by actual purification and advancement. Otherwise, okay, no animals, and then what? No people either. Because if you're attached to your wife or your children, you could come back again as a human being. So that's not really the point, to have know this or know that. It's to purify your consciousness. When Malati was here recently, I verified the story because it involved her, and I tell her repeatedly, I wanted to make sure I got it straight. So in San Francisco in the early days, she had a dog. And she used to bring this dog on the morning walks at Prabhupada. And then one day the dog wasn't there anymore. So Prabhupada inquired, where is the dog? She said, well, you know, I couldn't keep it anymore, so I gave it to, there's a couple, they were like friends of Krishna at that point, they weren't really devotees. And she said, and they treat it like a person. So Prabhupada said, dog is also a person. She said, but no, you don't understand. He eats at the table. He eats the same thing they eat. He eats from the same plates. They treat him like a person. Prabhupada said again, dog is also a person. Because we don't see that. We're seeing everything impersonally, including each other, what to speak of animals. And that's why so many animals are mercilessly slaughtered. So the real point is not to not have this or not have that. Sure, to be rabbinical, you can't have pets in your house. Vedic culture is, yes, you have dogs, cats, everything, but they're outside. We know that. We've repeatedly said that. But it's not about not having either. It's not that if I don't have a dog or if I don't have a cat or what, then you don't have a wife and don't have children and don't have anything. And you're still attached to something. You're copins, like we know that story. So it's about rising above attachment by purification and surrender to Krishna, not just about not having things.
Jai. Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you.